Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. An organization known as Survival International has launched a campaign criticizing conservation efforts in the U.S. and abroad. On the surface, this sounds extremely regressive. But the campaign, dubbed Stop the Con, makes the case that conservation efforts like national parks and nature reserves are often built on the violent displacement of indigenous communities that called those spaces their homes. Take Yosemite, for example. In 1851, California soldiers came across the land that is now a famed tourist destination and kicked out the Awanichi tribe. The displacement that wrapped up as recently as 1969 erased the history of indigenous people in that region and whitewashed the idea of conservation. Writing about the campaign in the Huffington Post the week that the National Park Service turned 99 years old is my guest, Julian Brave Noisecat. He is the Native Issues Fellow at the Huffington Post and a member of the Kaneem Lake Band Tequesqueson in British Columbia, where he was nominated to run for chief in 2014. He recently wrote the piece, The Forgotten History of Violent Displacement, that helped create the national parks. Welcome to Uprising, Julian.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I'm so sorry I mispronounced that word. Can you say it for me on the air so everyone can hear?
It's Tequesqueson.
Thank you very much. Okay, so how did the Stop the Con campaign begin? A woman named Tessia Bobricky carried out a major stunt at Yosemite and videotaped herself doing it. What is her motivation?
So the Stop the Con campaign began 2 weeks ago when, as you said, Tessia Bobricky, an environmental activist from California, scaled El Capitan in Yosemite National Park and dangled from a rope 3,000 feet above the valley floor. You can watch a video of the stunt in my article, and the clip can also be found on YouTube. Her motivation was to expose the quote-unquote con of conservation, that is, the violent displacement of indigenous peoples in the name of conservation.
And often we think of development as displacing indigenous peoples, not conservation. You brought up in your article, and I briefly mentioned it, the history of a park like Yosemite, which is the site of Tessia's PR stunt to launch this campaign. Do most national parks in the U.S. have a similar history as Yosemite?
Well, it is really the history of the U.S. no matter where you are.
Right.
In order for the United States to be founded, indigenous peoples everywhere had to be killed and displaced. But to specifically address your question, yes, many national parks have this history. Yellowstone, another park, for example, was under the care of the U.S. Army from 1886 to 1918 in order to keep out indigenous peoples and poor settlers who lived in the area.
And staying on Yosemite for a little bit, I very briefly mentioned the tribe that was kicked out. But initially, of course, they were pushed out, but then they returned to take on roles that were essentially servicing people who visited the park, mostly white Americans at that time. And can you go a little bit deeper into that history?
Yeah, so in Yosemite, the Awanichi Indians, as they were called and as they called themselves, worked for years, all the way until actually 1969, to give a sense for how recent this history really is, as performers sort of performing fun in sort of a really messed up way. They actually had to perform as Plains Indians because that's the idea about what Indians were supposed to be that tourists had.
They had to perform for people who were there?
Yeah, so they did dances and they did sort of like Wild West show type things. And they did that so that they could keep living in the park, which had always been their homeland. And they were finally evicted in 1969, and their homes unceremoniously burned down in a firefighting drill by the Park Service.
Now, there have been historians that have uncovered this history, and I want to get to that. But most of the history that we read in our school books, and even, you know, the pamphlets that we get when we visit these parks, don't really tell the story well enough or at all. The story, for example, of John Muir is very sanitized. And we hear this romantic story of how his conservationist ideals helped preserve spaces like Yosemite. And so, you know, do you see that there's been a concerted effort to not really face this history?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned pamphlets and school textbooks, but even recently, Ken Burns' celebrated documentary on the national parks which called them America's best idea, completely ignored this history, even though the scholarship was out there.
So let's talk about some of the historians that you write about. You mentioned several in your article: William Cronin, Mark Spence, Carl Jacoby. How has their how have they dug into this history, and how has it been received? Have they broken into the mainstream, or have they sort of ruffled feathers?
So unfortunately, I would say that we live in a time when public spaces like the national parks are under attack by the political right. And this history doesn't fit well into the moral fables that, you know, sort of go along partisan lines. And so environmental circles who feel under attack haven't been very receptive to these historians' work. I think that's really too bad, because looking at the history allows us to see ways in which public management of spaces like the national parks, which are undoubtedly beautiful and need to be preserved, could be improved.
Now, is it a Western notion, Julian, for us to look at conservation of nature as these uninhabited spaces that we preserve outside of our living spaces and separate from them? Is this history telling us that we need to change the way we approach conservation, you know, from the ground up, and the ties that indigenous communities have to the land they occupy and that they've lived on for centuries?
Yeah, so I think conservation is absolutely a Western notion, but I think calling it a Western notion isn't specific enough. As Carl Jacoby points out in his outstanding book, Crimes Against Nature, conservation is specifically an upper class idea that comes from the late 19th and early 20th century elite on the East Coast, people like John Muir, Teddy Roosevelt, et cetera, people who write these sort of travelogues and have the kind of money to do that thing. And conservation did target indigenous people's removal, but it also targeted the rural poor. So it meant keeping out all the people who had been living in these parks.
Now, you mentioned earlier the history of the United States is the history of national parks. So let's talk a little bit more about that. The U.S. national parks history does fit within the broader history of colonization of the U.S., the genocide of Native Americans. And yet we, you know, don't really think about that when we visit national parks, for example, when we celebrate, which, you know, certainly we should be happy that there are spaces that haven't been developed by corporations or, you know, completely allowed to languish by the right wing. But how important is it for us to set the history of national parks within the broader history of U.S. colonization?
So far from taking place, I think, in the deep past, on some faraway frontier or on rural Indian reservations that are hidden from the public eye and that we never hear about, I think that the history of colonization and settlement is everywhere, and it's inescapable. And I think that that's really the point that I was trying to drive home subtly with this sort of history about this piece about the national parks, because, you know, everybody takes road trips to these places. You know, everybody has their memories of them. But what people don't realize often is that this was all Indian land. It was a place where indigenous peoples buried their ancestors, worshiped their creator, and lived for millennia.
Do we see the process of conservation as it had played out in the U.S. playing out elsewhere in the world today, where indigenous communities are driven out in order to preserve spaces for tourists, etc.? And, you know, it's okay for tigers or lions to inhabit them, but not people?
Yeah, so, I mean, like everything American, the model of conservation that Survival International is critiquing and that these scholars have studied has been exported elsewhere, and according to Survival International, places like Cameroon, Botswana, and India are currently practicing this conservation as displacing the indigenous peoples model.
So what is Survival International's goal with their Stop the Con campaign? Are they trying to change the minds of conservationists? What would be the way to approach these issues?
So Survival International wants to start a public debate. So, you know, hopefully having me on the show today helps continue that conversation. And I think that what they kind of want to strive for primarily is the inclusion of indigenous peoples as stewards and managers of these public spaces. Mm-hmm. I think that that's their primary aim, but they want to start by by starting this conversation.
And we will post a link to their website, survivalinternational.org, later today on our website, as well as a link to your article, Julian, at uprisingwithsonali.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
My guest is Julian Brave Noisecat, and he is a Native Issues Fellow at the Huffington Post. He is also the author of a new article called The Forgotten History of Violent Displacement That Helped Create the National Parks. This week, U.S. National Park Service turned 99 years old. This is Uprising. We'll be right back after this break.